They didn't have many big hits, and in the beginning, when it would have made a difference, they didn't even make videos. In the 1980s, when post-punk extravagance was the name of the game, they dared to call themselves the Smiths, as if to pretend they were just an ordinary bunch of guys. And yet they were one of the defining groups of their era. With the release of their complete works, rock historian Ed Ward has the occasion to look back and try and figure out what made them so important.
Call me morbid, call me pale. I've spent 6 years on your trail. 6 long years on your trail. Call me morbid, call me pale. I've spent 6 years on your trail. 6 full years of my life on your trail. And if you have 5 seconds to spare, then I'll tell you the story of my life. 16, clumsy and shy, I went to London and died. I booked myself in at the YWCA. I said, I like it here, can I stay? I like it here, can I stay? Do you have a vacancy for a back scrubber?
When Stephen Patrick Morrissey was 13, he was watching the Old Grey Whistle Test, a BBC rock television show, when the New York Dolls came on. Later he said that it was my first real emotional experience. It was hardly his last. Growing up awkward, tall, and shy in suburban Manchester, he was the archetypal kid who didn't fit in, writing poetry and letters to the British rock press, disagreeing articulately with their critics. Years before, Manchester had lost out to Liverpool as Britain's provincial rock capital, but with the arrival of punk, it snatched the crown back. Morrissey joined a punk band called the Nosebleeds briefly, but he had other ideas. In May 1982, he read that a writer for Record Mirror named Johnny Marr, a guitarist who'd been in a couple of bands, was looking for a lyricist. The two met and hit it off immediately. And a year later, they'd put together a band, had a couple of gigs, been signed to London's Rough Trade Records, and started releasing singles. It took a couple of them, but they eventually had a hit of sorts.
All men have secrets and here is mine, so let it be known. For we have been through hell and high tide, I think I can rely on you. And yet you start to recoil, heavy words are so lightly thrown. But still I leap in front. Flying bullet for you. So what difference does it make?
This wasn't pop music as we knew it by any means, although a superficially similar band, R.E.M., was operating in the United States, an odd vocalist matched with a guitarist who could seemingly do anything. Unlike Michael Stipe, though, Morrissey didn't cloak his lyrics in ambiguity.
The rain falls hard on a humdrum town. This town has dragged you down. The rain falls hard on a humdrum town. This town has dragged you down. And everybody's got to live their life. And God knows I've got to live mine. God knows I've got to live
Morrissey claimed to be celibate, although the British pop press was skeptical. The slowly increasing number of fans didn't care, though. Some of them were drawn to the confessional songwriting, some to the guitar sounds. For instance, on the B-side of William It Was Really Nothing was this gem.
I'm the sun and the air of a
the shyness that is criminally vulgar. I am son and heir of nothing in particular. You should chime out.
The Smiths were also lucky to have a rhythm section like bassist Andy Rourke and drummer Mike Joyce, who seemed to navigate the odd twists and turns of Johnny Marr's melodies with ease. The Smiths were also masters of marketing. Each of their singles and albums had, on the cover, an icon of filmdom, his or her photograph, manipulated by Morrissey and Rough Trade's art director Joe Slee. Terrence Stamp, Elvis Presley, Shelagh Delaney, and James Dean were among the cover boys and girls who gave a new Smiths release a distinctive look. And it was a good thing that there was a distinctive look, because after their second album, Meat is Murder, took aim at some social issues, it became clear that Marr's melodies were pretty similar and that Morrissey's great subject was himself, take it or leave it. What happened next was complicated. The band slowly gained momentum with the fans, at least in Britain. Their third album, The Queen is Dead, is probably the high point of the band's career, released in June 1986 after a long and unexplained delay.
Take me out tonight, where there's music and there's people and the young and the light. Driving in your car, I never, never wanted to go home, because I haven't got one anymore. Take me.
By 1987, the band was big enough that it had to sign with EMI in order to meet the demand for its records, and immediately everything fell apart. Johnny Marr had been working nonstop, both with the Smiths and with other bands, and he realized he was about to have a breakdown. He quit the band, and within a few months, the Smiths were no more. Well, that's not strictly true. Their cult was growing in America, and it was rampant in Britain. They'd released a lot of singles and B-sides, which hadn't shown up on albums, and their record company set about repackaging them. And they've influenced pop culture disproportionately. Smith's phrases turn up everywhere, from the Meat is Murder meme, to Douglas Copeland's novel Girlfriend in a Coma, which is a Smith song, to a poster for a club event this past weekend, which I saw emblazoned with the words Hang the DJ. The Smiths are dead. Long live the Smiths.
Ed Ward lives in France. He reviewed the Smiths' complete collection, now repackaged for CD and vinyl. Coming up, David Bian Cooley reviews the new Kiefer Sutherland drama, Touch. This is Fresh Air.